Hey y'all, welcome back to the Live with Audacity podcast. Today's episode is so fun. Dr. Lynetta Willis, psychologist and family empowerment coach, is here and we discuss so much. We talk about how our past experiences can jade us into assuming what our spouse is thinking, healing ourselves so we can show up for our kids as understanding, loving parents that we are, and really learning to question our automatic thoughts that are damaging to us and the ones around us that we love. This episode is epic. We have the absolute best time ever together. Just thinking about how fun it was made writing this intro fun and full of positive energy. I am so excited for you to hear this episode. You can hear the excitement and the positivity oozing out of the speakers. So let's dive in. You're listening to the Live with Audacity podcast. I'm your host, Melissa Stewart. Audacity is defined by Merriam-Webster as intrepid boldness or disregard for normal constraints. And that's exactly what we have here. The Live with Audacity podcast is aimed at giving you the courage to explore your someday dreams, do things your way, and start making things happen in your life right now. I'm a mama to four kiddos, ranging from college student to kindergartner, wife to a high school football and track coach, and a multi-passionate entrepreneur. Together with my guests, we're going to teach you how to live with audacity and intentionality, discover and utilize your unique skills and talents, and step into who you are meant to be in order to make your someday dreams a reality. Are you ready? Here we go. Hey everyone, thank you so much for tuning back into the Live with Audacity podcast. I'm so excited about today's episode because I have the amazing psychologist, Dr. Lynetta Willis, and she is a family empowerment coach. She works with couples, parents, families, kids, and helps frustrated families break unhelpful patterns and cross-generational cycles so they can move from stable misery into peaceful harmony, which I will say, when we were just talking about stable misery, I was trying to say that that is a word, or that's a couple of words that you don't necessarily hear together, but when you think about what that could possibly be, you're like, oh, totally know what that is. So first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
We are going to have so much fun. But Okay, start out by telling us how in the world all of this came about and how you coined the term stable misery.
Yeah, so I have been using that term, funny enough, for like over 20 years. I don't even remember when I first used it. But I was with some friends and colleagues and I was trying to figure out, like, how do I encapsulate what it is that I do? And I just mentioned it because it's something I've done for years. And one of my friends was like, whoa, stop, rewind, and then play again. What was that phrase? And I said it and we were off to the races after that. Like now I came up with this whole thing about how to describe it and all this. And nobody ever asks me what it means. I just say it and everybody's like, oh yeah, I've been there.
Right. It's something we so relate to because we've all been there where we're just trying not to die.
Exactly. Exactly. And for me, stable misery, unbeknownst to me before I started using it, has been part of my life for a while. And it's something that I've had to break free from continuously. Growing up, my family used what was called the four horsemen mindset of parenting, which is pain, blame, shame, and avoidance to keep kids in line. Like that was just the status quo. And I don't say that to shame my family. It's just what they knew and what their parents knew, you know? And as I grew up, I realized that there were a lot of cycles and patterns that were in my family that I wanted to break. You know, I often talk about breaking cycles and building legacies and families. And what people often view, you know, when they realize like, oh my goodness, there's so much that I don't want to pass on to my kids. Sometimes it's easy to view it as like a marathon or a sprint. Like I have to change everything, you know,
right now
so that I don't screw up my kids. Right.
And we all do it.
We all put that pressure on us. And then every time we yell or every time we slip or whatever, then it's like, oopsie, my kids are going to end up on the street prostituting, selling crack, and it's all my fault, you know? And so we kind of get into that space. But really, what I had to do and what I encourage people to do is don't look at it so much as a marathon. Look at it more like a relay race, you know, like with a baton. Like, so we were handed a baton and we started running, you know, but it's not up to us to run the entire race by ourselves. We're going to run our race. We're going to change what we can. We're going to do, we're going to give it our all. And then we're going to hand the baton to our kids. And then they're going to run their race, you know, and hopefully they'll run it a little bit better than we did. But then it's up to them to run their leg, right? I can't obsess about the leg of the race my kid's going to run because I'm too busy, you know, about to pass out on my own leg, right? But that's not the way we were supposed to do. We're supposed to do what we can, gather what we can, and then pass the baton on to them so that they can run the race the best that they can. We can set them up for success. So,
real quick, I feel like that's super valuable to point out because as moms, especially, we get so wrapped up in the controlling, like, oh, you're going to make me look bad and you're going to, you know what I mean? Like, oh no, you did this horrible thing and that's reflecting on me as a parent. And that's the thing, right? Is we got to make sure that we do the absolute best that we can while we have them. And then, like you said, pass the baton and say, I'm so here for you no matter what you need, but you're on your own.
Exactly. I'm going to sit down and eat a banana and watch you run, kid. Like,
I'll cheer you up from the sidelines. But you can't, You know, that's the thing is we try so hard to run the race for them and then they're like, they're not making their own decisions. So, okay, go ahead.
Exactly. Yes. No, so good. So, for me, I realized there were a lot of cycles that I wanted to break, like divorce, addiction, health issues, the use of spanking and corporal punishment. You know, I wanted to retire those four horsemen because I did not want to pass those on to my kids. But what I found and what I think a lot of us find is it's hard.
So hard.
Right. And even with all of my training and all of my experience and, you know, all of this stuff, I found myself, you know, consistently falling into these ruts where, you know, in most of my life, things were fine. They were familiar. Everything was, you know, I felt relatively safe. But things like in my marriage and as a mom, I felt unhappy, unfulfilled, you know, with myself even. And so that's really where stable misery comes in, where we feel really like things are fine. Like there's nothing inherently wrong, but we're unhappy, we're unfulfilled, right?
And be better.
Yes. And we find ourselves falling into the same patterns again and again and again and again. And it's not always just ho-hum. Like sometimes it could be like yelling and fighting and all this stuff. But the thing is, it gets predictable and that's what makes it stable. You know, whether you're shutting down or you're lighting up, it gets predictable and it's miserable. Like you can't, and you're like, I can't figure out a way to get out of this. How do we get out of this? And it like pervades through the family. It impacts the marriage. It impacts the kids because kids can be in stable misery too. I'm working with a mother-daughter duo right now. And that's very much the case where the daughter and the mom are both in stable misery. And they were, but you know, they're definitely taking steps and very, very amazing, courageous steps and pulling out of that. When we first started working together, they absolutely were stuck in stable misery, you know? So
that's wild.
I know. So I had this realization as a wife and as a mom that things are okay, but I'm not happy. And I realized that a lot of it had to do with me as well, which there's a frustrating aspect of that because, you know, you never want it to be you. You want it to be somebody else.
Amen, girl. Amen. Clapping for you over here. It's true.
Why does it have to be me? I don't wanna. But you
I
know.
Thought I was perfect. What the heck?
Exactly. But the good thing about that is you have control over you and you can change it, right? And I realized that a lot of what was keeping me stuck had to do with experiences that I had in the past, like molestation, bullying. I was in an abusive relationship in college. All of these things left me feeling unworthy and not enough and undeserving. And so those all fed into like how we think about ourselves, like feeling, I say stable misery has minions. And unworthiness is a minion of stable misery. It's one of those things that keeps us stuck in those patterns. Like, I am unworthy. I am undeserving. I am not enough to be able to get out of this, right?
Do you feel like, do you feel like unworthiness is probably the one that most of our experiences come back to and the way that, that we live our lives? I don't know.
Yes, it's a huge one. Unworthiness, not enoughness, like all of that stuff feeds into how we show up in our relationships, especially our most intimate ones with like with our husbands and with our kids, because they reflect back to us and we care, like we care about what they think deeply. And when things go off the rails, this is how it was for me when my marriage was not nowhere near dynamic joy. Absolutely stuck in stable misery. I might lash out at my husband for things, but secretly I felt it was all my fault. I was ruining everything. And, you know, I'm not good enough for this, right? I'm not good enough for this. I shouldn't even be here. This life shouldn't even be mine, you know? And so there was a lot of that. And I wasn't always aware of it. It took me really working with someone and they reflecting back to me how my actions were actually a reflection of what I was thinking and my thoughts, that I was able to see like, whoa, there's a lot of crap, ton of crap in there. Where is all that coming from? What?
You never realize how much is there till you talk with someone or get a coach and you're like, what?
Yes.
Who am I?
Right, right. Like, I thought this was just about getting my kids to listen. And now, dang, like, you just pulled everything out of the closet. So,
isn't that so funny though? It's like we all have those things that we reach out to a coach to get help with. And it seems like it doesn't matter what the issue is or what the problem is. Like you said, it's, help with your kids. And I reached out about my money mindset and things like that. And it all comes back to all the same stuff, right? We're all dealing with the same stuff and the same.
My goodness.
Yeah, right. All the crap.
It is. It's so funny. I often joke. I was like, it's amazing to me how many parents reach out to me for parenting. And it's funny. We handle the parenting part like in the first three sessions. Like, it's like there's three or four sessions. They're good on parenting. Yeah. And then we dive into all these other areas that are impacting their parenting that they just didn't see. You know, and so it is so true. It's sort of like the kids are the easy part, actually. It's us. We're the ones that, you know, are like, oh my gosh. So it is absolutely true.
It's so weird how they all, all different things relate back to it. It's wild. Okay,
it is. So then what ended up happening, I was in, this happened a few times, but I had what I like to call a mystical experience, very deep spiritual experience. Yes. And what ended at the culmination of it, at the end of it, I ended up, call it a divine download, but I ended up writing a book called My Forgotten Self. And it ended up being a children's book. But really what it's about is this little girl who's impacted and influenced by her family. Like, she wants to do all these things and her family's like, no, you can't do that. And here's why. No, you can't do that. You know, and we've all been there and we've probably done it to our kids. You know, they have like these big dreams, like, I want to ride a unicorn. And we're like, that's stupid. But, you know, okay, we might not say that, but, you know, so I think, so it's about.
I actually had this experience recently. I think I said something like, you know, what could you do if you, I posted on Facebook and I was like, what do you think our kids could do mm-hmm. if we actually supported their dreams mm. rather than told them that they couldn't do something?
Yeah.
And someone actually posted on there, well, you know, we do still have to be realist. And I'm like, I don't think do we though? Not when they're little. Not when they're little.
Do we know?
No, not at all.
Right. Like, that's more of our neurosis, I think, than anything. Like, if your 5-year-old wants to ride a unicorn, what is it going to hurt? What they come up with, you know, you might be surprised. Don't get mad if you see a little unicorn prancing around your house. Like,
amen, girl.
So she learns that she gets all this, and then she has this really powerful experience with this being named I Am. And she learns that she's worthy, and she learns that she's important, and she learns that she can do many things. Right. And that for me, like going through the process of writing that and publishing it and really sitting with that message and realizing that there were parts of me that didn't buy that, right? Like it was a really powerful shift for me because I ended up realizing and coming to the understanding, like, you know what? I am worthy and I am deserving. And most importantly, realizing that I didn't have to live in stable misery as a parent or as a partner or within myself. And so I really took conscious steps to break free. Now, the good news was, that at that point, I had been a therapist for many years, # imposter syndrome, right? And so I had gained a lot of insights and wisdom and just from watching, because it's always easier to fix somebody else's, like you can help somebody else do stuff, right? But it's just within yourself. It's like, oh, it's harder. I'll do that next week, but let's get on your stuff. So I really learned.
So much easier, right?
It is. To
help other people than deal with our own crap.
Exactly. So, I came up with I call it the relationship, evolution roadmap. And I use it with my clients now to help them break free from stable misery. And it's the exact same steps that I took to get out of stable misery and still take, because that's the other thing I think is really important. Some of us are perfectionists. I have no idea what that's like.
Me neither, girl.
I know. And we have this fixed mindset, right? That we either are here or we're there. We're great or we suck. Or, you know, I'm either good at this or I'm bad at this. You know, so it's this sense, and we can approach stable misery the same way. I'm either in stable misery or I'm not in stable misery. When the truth is, I often tell people, don't look at it so much as an on-off light switch. Look at it more of a dimmer, right? When you break free from stable misery, what you realize is on one side, like the really low setting of the dimmer, yeah, there's stable misery. But on the other side, the really bright side of the dimmer is dynamic joy. And at any given point, we have the power, and this is where the growth mindset piece comes in. We have the power to influence where we are on those spectrums. And when you're finding yourself getting close to stable misery, instead of doing what I did, which is, see, I've ruined everything. I'm horrible. Like, you know, all this stuff. Say, like, take it what's the word I'm looking for? It's just a sign. It's all it is a sign that, okay, I have the opportunity to shift something right now to take me one step closer to joy.
I
have
love
the
that.
Opportunity, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just an indicator.
Yeah. Ooh, indicator. Yes, that's the word. I love that. That's what you said, though, is, you know, not because, you know, once we realize a lot of times that there is a lot of stuff that we need to work through, we're like, okay, let's go to work. Let's just get it over with and mm-hmm. be done. And that's what people don't really understand is that it's you're going to do this for the rest of your life is yes. work on your stuff. you can't get complacent about it because the minute that you do, it'll start to rise up and you'll be like, wait a minute, that old person is coming back. What's happening?
Yeah. Yes. And if you take a fixed mindset approach to it, then it's I failed. I haven't done well. Something is wrong with me, right? And that's where we give up easily with things. We see our efforts as useless, especially in marriages. Like, we're here again. We can't get, you know, like nothing's going to work. And that's where I see people end up going from that soulmate to roommate phase, you know, where you just kind of give up. Like, oh, whatever. I'm not, why
we're never going to make it out of this.
Exactly. And whereas if we take more of a growth mindset approach to it, then the challenges or those we really do embrace things like stable misery as an indicator, right? It's like a challenge that if we put effort into, we can move this relationship, even in this one moment, to the in the direction that we want. And failures aren't seen as failures, they're seen as learning opportunities. Like, oh, we slipped back into that pit again. How did that happen? Let's talk about that. And my husband and I will literally do that now. Like, we'll like take a step back and be like, we did it again. What was that? You know, what happened? And he's like, well, this, and we're, our favorite line is, okay, well, the story I was telling myself or the story going on, the story in my head was, right? And so we'll talk about, which is huge, by the way, the stories we tell ourselves, humongous. And so really realizing like, oh, where exactly did we fall off? Where exactly did we slip? And using that information, not so much as an indicator that, see, this is stupid. Why are we even trying? We're never going to be able to do anything different. But using it as an indicator that we have something to learn. And we have an opportunity here to use that learning to move us towards that dynamic joy that we want to see. Because we still do it. It's not like I broke free from stable misery and never went back. No, it's like a horrible movie of Groundhog Day sometimes where you're like, dang it, right?
Yeah, it's so true though.
Yeah.
And I'll say too, like, I love that you guys got on the same page and you guys can have that super open communication about like, well, shoot, how did this happen again? And you'll go back and forth to try to figure out, okay, where was the break? Where was the thing that caught us up and made us stumble? Because we're so good at that, right? Not just saying, we're never going to get past this and we're never going to figure out how to get out of this, but it's opening those lines of communication because, as we know, communication is the key to relationships, right? And being able to do that lovingly and honestly and say, you know, I really just felt like you were saying this. And a lot of times, our spouse, our person will look at us and be like, how in the world did you get that?
Right. Where did that story come from? That wasn't me. And that is exactly what ends up happening. Like, we realize like, that's where you took that, or that's how you got, you know, there. And I'm so glad you said loving and compassionately too, because there was a study that was done and I can't remember where exactly. But it was a study and it was done on couples. And like a lot of people say, like, if couples just fix communication, you know, then everything will be better. And I know, especially early in my, when I was practicing, I was taught, you know, you teach them I statements and you know, all this stuff. The problem is there was no compassion in them. So you'd be like, I get frustrated when you know, and it's sort of like, oh, that's not helping. But what this study found was it's not just learning to communicate. You can teach a monkey to communicate, you know, through like gestures and all that. It's about doing it with compassion. And that is a key component. I will say, and this is anecdotally speaking, the huge difference that I notice when I'm working with couples between the couples that sort of fly through our work together or like float through, you know, and those that get there, but it takes a little bit of a little bit more time, a little bit more grit, is the assumption of positive intention. That the key indicator for me. And
so good.
Yes. When couples assume positive, and they're the couple, and I know them because I'll say like, oh, it's so interesting that, you know, he said that and you went there with it and, you know, and I'll talk about positive. And it's almost like this foreign concept, like, well, of course I know that he means well for me or, why wouldn't I? Like, why would, you know, whereas the other couples, and I was one of the other couples where it's like, you know, you like dig the trench and you hide in, you got your barbed wire out and you're ready for the fight, you know? And you're like,
you must hate my guts because you said that.
Exactly. You said that just to make me mad so that I would blah, 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 blah. Right.
Yeah.
And those, it takes longer because that positive intention. And I think it goes back to the compassion too. I think that's why it works so well, because it's easier to feel compassion towards someone that you think only has your best interests at heart. But when you assume that, no, you're coming for me, so I'm coming for you. You know, I mean, it's hard to have compassion there. So
do you find that sometimes there are instances where the other person isn't having that positive, loving intention behind their words, and they are kind of coming at it like, I'm ready to, let's go. I'm ready to fight.
Oh, yeah. I was there. Oh, my goodness. See, probably too much self-disclosure here. So my grandmother.
That's okay. We are so on the same page. It's ridiculous.
My grandmother and my father and my mother got divorced when I was about a year old, probably less than a year old. And my grandmother could not stand my father. I mean, God rest her soul. She's passed on now. Could not stand him. Like, ugh. And when I got older, my grandmother told me, she's like, you know, you and me and your father agree on something. And I was like, what? Stop everything. These words have never been spoken and will never be spoken again. So I'm listening. And she
said, let me have a video camera.
Right. And she said, I put the video camera down real quick when she said this. She said, the thing that we both agree on is when you want to and you get really mad, your words can really cut down to the white meat. And I was like, Oh man, that's what you agree on?
That's the only thing. Thanks, guys.
I know. It's
right on my back.
But it was true. It was so true. Like, and I say that to say what often happens in relation. I mean, unless you're dealing with people who have even then, I was about to say personality disorders in that spectrum, but even then, what usually happens is there's a lot of pain underneath. So when I got to the point where I'm ready to cut somebody to the white meat, I was already so hurt and scared and in a space of complete unworthiness and undeservedness that the only thing I could think to do to protect myself would be to lash out.
Yeah.
Because you're getting too close to that part of me that feels like a 5-year-old piece of crap. And I want you to back up because you aren't going to hurt her. I just go away, you know? And so I call it the three-headed dog, right? I had like the Cerberus, like the three-headed dog would lash out at people and try to bite people's heads off. But what I realized was if you really, and we all have some form of a Cerberus. Some of them are cute little puppies and some of them are like mine.
My friends have told me I'm a Chihuahua, so I'm on board, girl. We're like right there.
But see, it's so interesting. But what I found is if you can take enough time to step to the side and look behind the three-headed dog, there is often a very young, tattered, terrified little part that Cerberus is protecting. And when I started viewing not just myself, but other people from that perspective, I was able to get my compassion there from that standpoint, realizing when you lash out at me, it's not because you're enjoying it necessarily. Now, again, there are some cases where people do, and that's a whole different discussion for all, that's when we get into sociopathy and all that. Not talking about that stuff. But, you know, most of the time, the people that we love, they're not intentionally wanting to hurt us. It's just a form of protection. And in those moments, we are not us anymore. Like, amen. In those moments when I would lash out at my husband wasn't my husband anymore. You know?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I'm so glad you said that. And I actually got teary-eyed when you were saying, if you look behind the Cerberus, there is, you know, a small child-like person that's just feeling so hurt and pain and all that stuff. I got tears in my eyes because, that is so how I felt back when that was my defense mechanism, right?
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And realizing okay, that part needs some attention. and need some love. And I had to realize that and shift that. That's where it's about going within, right? And healing ourselves. And that's part of the Relationship Evolution Roadmap. It's an acronym, PATHS, and the H stands for healing, right? And so whenever we're talking about relationships, there is always, 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 our healing a relationship, there's always something within us that needs to be healed. And if we ignore that, the relationship will more than likely fall right back into those stable misery pits, because the stable misery pit is helpful in that it keeps everything familiar. And that's what that three-headed dog wants. It wants everything to be familiar, because if it's predictable and it's familiar and I know what's coming, I can protect this little kid behind me even more.
Yep. And you know how to attack the problem.
Exactly. But when we talk about—
And I put that in air quotes, because we're not actually attacking the problem.
Right. No, we're not. When you talk about healing and changing and being different and exploring and experimenting, and oh my God, one of the three heads is going to explode, because that's dangerous.
Well, and too, it's funny. When you start doing that healing work on yourself, when people come at you, you know, like you said, that you at the beginning, you feel like having those conversations and trying to communicate, you always assume the worst, right? Yeah. That person is out to get you. But then when you start doing all that healing, you really kind of, at least for me, things like that don't really bother you so much anymore, because you're like, it's cool. Like, I mean, that's your stuff that you're dealing with, and I don't need to deal with that, right? Like,
exactly.
I can walk away from that.
Exactly. You realize, like, you know, and this is another phrase I've been using for 20 years. Not everything that comes at you is about you.
That's
right?
Good.
Bottom line, not everything that comes at you is about you. And when you're clear on your stuff and what is yours, it's much easier. It's much easier for me even now to realize, like, when my husband comes in and he's grumpy, or even when he's blaming me for something, there's a part of me that would jump on the blame bandwagon for myself and start getting down on myself. But now I'm like, I'm not gonna put that on my bandwagon. That's just no, not welcome.
You're like,
but we can talk about what's going on with you. I'm gonna hand that right back. I'm gonna leave that right there. There you go. Yeah. All right. There we go. We're good now. Yeah. No, thank you. I'm good.
I love that so much, because it's so true, right? Like, if our spouse is in a bad mood or cranky or woke up on the wrong side of the bed, it's so easy to make it about us and like, what did we do and how do we get out of the way, or how do we fix your problem and your mood? And it, you know, when you start doing all that healing work on yourself, you realize that's your thing, boo. That's not my thing.
Exactly.
Like, you need to go take a nap or something. I don't know. But
something. I don't know.
I'm not responsible for this.
Eat a cracker. There's a book that I love to read. It's called A Course in Miracles.
I thought you were going to say it's called Eat a Cracker.
That should be a thing, though. That is totally a book title. Eat a cracker.
Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
No. But there's one line. It's like a spiritual channel book. But there's a one line in the book, and it says, I'm never upset for the reason I think I am. And I remember when I read that the first time, I was like, oh my gosh, that's so true. Because a lot of what I do is I help people identify and work through triggers. Right. So things from the past that have happened, that something in the present triggers that. And then we react as if we're back in the past. Right. Mm-hmm. And so realizing, like, when we get angry, we're never really angry for the reason we think we are. And another thing I tell people is, you know, you're triggered when you are handling a laser beam situation with an atom bomb. Right.
So that's good too.
Right. There's that huge thing where you're like, it was literally spilt milk. And now you're like screaming and crying and flailing
family hates me and you guys just don't respect me.
Yes. And it's like, okay, guess what? You're not upset for the reason you think you are right now. Like that's a very clear indicator right there.
Oh my gosh. So funny that you said that. We actually had a similar experience this during this week. My son used one of my wine glasses that my stepmom had given me while they were here last. And, you know, it was special to me. Mm-hmm. And he accidentally broke it. And I put my head down and I was like, ah. And then like 15 minutes later, I was like, I'm still waiting on an apology. And so we just had to have this whole conversation about how he was terrified to address it because he thought I was going to explode, which probably would have, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm working on that stuff too. And so we got kind of to that that high level where we were both and crying and upset and stuff. And then I had to like really focus and remember that I want to be patient and bring it back down and say, okay, let's really work this out. What am I really upset about? And what I was really upset about was that he was trying to make me feel like my feelings about it didn't matter because he was like, it's fine. You have another one. No big deal. And I was like, whoa, wait a second. And he's 11. He doesn't know what he's doing. Right. So we had to have that conversation and we had to really pull it all out. And I will say that this quarantine has really been beneficial in that way and has really brought us to be able to have those deep conversations rather than just rushing through and being like, this is a problem, we'll deal with it later, and brushing it under the rug and, you know, never being able to give him those tools for use in later in life. We're actually getting to work those things out and have those deep conversations and figure it out with each other. And it's just been so incredible.
Yes. If used appropriately, this quarantine really can be a gift because what happens is all the stable misery is magnified because you're around each other 100% of the time, most of the time, right? So it's sort of like things that you could usually just let go on your drive to work or something like that. Like, nope, it'll just circle right back around. And even that, I love that example that you gave with your son, because if we think about that from like a three-headed dog perspective, three-headed dogs don't always come out in the form of like mine did. But what it sounds like is his came out in the form of minimizing. Right. So one of his heads was like, just minimize it, make it not important. And then she won't hurt the little child behind me, you know? And so it was like, it's not that important. It's really that big. But like you said, really, he was terrified. Right. So there was a part of him behind that dog that was like, oh, she's going to kill me.
Like, I knew you were going to kill me.
Right. So the three-headed dog's like, I got this. We're just going to pretend like it didn't happen. All right, here, watch me work, right? And, you know, in an 11-year-old mind, of course, the three-headed dogs are, like, smaller and cuter at that age than they are when we get, like, to our age, where it's like, oh, yeah, it's like a cross between something from Alien and Predator. But, you know, it's like at that point.
I know, but, you know, now that we're working this out and talking about it, of course, I mean, we did, and we worked it out, but it just makes me so sad that, you know, like we said, oh God, we're going to screw up our kids. I feel like I've already failed. But on the scale, you know, we're moving toward the light and that's good.
Exactly. And I see that is so good. Like one thing I say about, so I often use, I realize I use a lot of things. So because I keep saying,
no, and I love it. I'm like, give me a book. I need a translator.
So I talk about, I use the phrase well, like we are well, right? Or I am well. And what well stands for is whole, enough, love, and learning. Never fail. Mm. And I love that piece around the learning, because if I, it's my fundamental core belief that if I am learning something, I am not failing. If I am learning something, I cannot fail, because I believe everything happens for a purpose. And that experience between you and your son, the purpose of that was for both of you to learn. You know, and as long as you've learned something, you can't possibly fail. Like now you have the wisdom and the knowledge and the insight, as does he. He has the knowledge, the wisdom, the insight, and the trust now that if I do something, and this is where it's going to really come back when he's like a teenager, right? Like I always say, like in my family growing up, let me finish a sentence. So in my family growing up, if something happened, if I did something, my immediate reaction was, how can I hide this? How can I hide it so that I don't get killed? Right?
Yes, same.
But I do not want my kids to feel that way. When something happens, I want their first thought to be, I've got to call my mom to help me through this. I got to call my dad to get advice on how to deal with it. Right? Yeah. So the fact that that experience happened between you and your son, that went in the trust bank of, oh, I can admit things to my mother and she won't bite my head off. She'll sit down and she'll talk to me about it, which is beautiful because that's something he's learned. And that is so important for our kids to know that they can trust us. We're not going to be your best friend, but we can be that person that you come to when the crap hits the fan. You don't have to try to hide it. You can come to me and get help.
Yeah. And it also taught me too, right? Is like, chill out, slow down, and like have an open heart when things like that happen. And you know, right? Like, because you know in your brain, but in your heart, sometimes it takes a little longer. I feel like I know in my brain that he didn't mean to do it. And I knew in that moment, I was like, man, I knew, obviously, I knew it was an accident, but it still didn't, you know. It still didn't stop me from being really frustrated by it, right? And so
you were hurt. You were mad.
And so it taught me too, to like just take a minute and really feel with my heart that it was an accident and be open and loving with him. So that was fantastic.
Take a second, take a breath. Absolutely. Just like, it's really just. You are not angry for the reason you think you are.
Boom, there you go, exactly.
And I love the fact too, that you were able to, you had that awareness. Like, I am really angry because it meant a lot to me. And the fact that he's minimizing it. And that's not, I don't want him going into the world thinking when you make a mistake, all you got to do to fix it is to minimize everybody's feelings.
So right, I was thinking like, oh gosh, if I don't deal with this right now, I am literally growing a psycho over here.
Narcissist much? It's like, Sunny, hon, we call that gaslighting. Okay. Oh, it's not a good thing. I don't know what you're talking about. It's not broken. It's totally fine.
What are you talking about? It just landed in the trash.
Right, right. What glass?
Oh my gosh, this is so much fun. We could literally sit here and chit chat all day long.
Seriously.
I know. Okay, so what's going on in your business right now? And what are you, who do you want to work with right now?
Yeah, so right now what I'm doing is right when this whole quarantine thing started, I began this group called Space to Breathe. And the tagline is literally take a second, take a breath. And I started it for unintentional homeschoolers like myself, is all new for, right? And also for parents who may, there's actually homeschooling parents in it, but parents who just may feel isolated and overwhelmed, you know, through this. And it's, I do it in 4-week increments and we make time to process. We make, you know, and to share how we're feeling. I also do tiny lessons. And meditations. And so, yes. And it's been such a good experience. I'm about to start on the second round now. And a lot of the people who were in the first round are going to continue, which of course is always a great testament. Everybody does it. Just jump ship. That was fine. Great. Thanks. Bye. so that's really what I'm working on now. And the thing that I'm excited about with that is my hope is, to even after the quarantine is over to morph it into something else. That can continue to sustain, because I really do think parents need space to breathe, right? Space to just come in and say, like, this is what's happening in my life or in my relationships right now. And I just want to stop and talk about it or get some guidance or some support around it. Or if this is the only time I have this week to meditate, then, hey, this is going to be it, right? So it's definitely something that I'm hoping will morph into something greater. And the other thing that I'm working on is a course that I've been developing for parents using the PATS model I described and a bit of another model that I created called the Elemental Living Model, which I use those to help them really go within and deal with the stuff that's going on within them so that they can then engage their children in a way that feels good, right? So it's not just getting tips and tricks thrown at you. Oh, your kid did this, do that, right? Yeah. But really also about, it's really for those people who want to deep dive and want to make lasting changes in themselves and in their relationships with you. So that's coming up probably in the fall.
I love that.
Yes. And who do I want to work with right now? Oh my gosh. You know, I just love working with people. Like, as I used to, like I said, I was a therapist. I mean, I still am, I guess, but I've moved over to coaching. And now I do online coaching with parents, families, and couples. And the reason I made that move is because I really love action, right? Like the three phases of the work that I do are the enlightened phase, the engagement phase, and the evolution phase. And the enlightened phase is really about getting the insights and, you know, the awareness. But the engagement phase, that's really, really important. That's where we do a lot of the work stuff. So I love working with people who are like, I'm ready to change. I'm ready to break cycles. I'm ready to build legacies. Let's do this. I'm open. I want to get aware. I have some awareness. I want to get more so that I can show up as the parent and the partner that I want to be. Like, those are the people that I'm like, come on in, let's do it. So those are the ones that I really, really love work. Same with couples, you know, those couples who are struggling, but they're committed to the relationship. You know, when I was in doing therapy, I did a lot of what I call divorce counseling, where it's like, sort of like, oh, you want me to pull you back from the brink of the divorce? No, that's not really what I do.
You're like, can't do that.
I know.
You waited too long.
Really. Exactly. But those who are like, no, we don't know how to get out of this, but we trust that we can and we need help. Right. And
I love that you said that. I'm so sorry to cut you off. I'm so sorry. But I love that you I love that you said that, only because I was on a call the other day with, I was doing a podcast interview with someone, and she asked me, you know, how do you decide, because I am divorced and I came, my previous marriage was abusive. And so she said, she was like, what would you tell someone who's in your position? And that was one of the things that I highlighted, right? Was, you have to decide, like, are y'all willing to work it out? Mm-hmm. Is your spouse ready and willing to work it out and work on themselves so that they can figure out how to be a better spouse? And if not, you know, you each have to make that decision for yourself and then decide if you either want to go forward or not. And so I think it's really valuable that you brought that up, because, you know, if you wait all the way till you're at the brink of divorce and you're like, you know, we need a freaking miracle over here, it might be too late.
Yeah. And, you know, my thing is like, that those types of things would be great for therapy, right? Like, take that to therapy. Coaching is really that commitment to work through the marriage and move things to another space. That is great for coaching, because you come in ready, right? Like, when you have that question of, do we though? Like, that's great for therapy, because then you can use 5 or 6 sessions trying to figure out whether or not you even want to move forward with the relationship. That's appropriate. But people who come to me are like, no, we're committed and we want to, we just don't know how. You know, and sometimes it may end up that you decide, like, you know what, maybe we shouldn't. And that's okay, you know. But, you know, coming in, a lot of the people that I work with, it's like, no. We want to improve this. We want to make this work. We're both invested. We're both committed.
I love that so much, because you can get so much more work done when both people are like, no, we are doing this and we're going to do the work to figure this out. I love that.
Exactly. And it's not like an open-ended therapeutic relationship where it's just like, we could be here for 5 years if we need. No. Like,
yeah, that's so not true, in coaching. Right? Oh, man. I love that. Okay. Let's do a quick rapid fire. What is a book, article, person, or talk that's changed your life?
Ooh, I would say The Shack was a book that changed my life. I was raised in an environment, like, even in a religious environment, where we were all seen as dark and bad. And we needed redemption. And the shack really gave me a different view of what God could be like. And I remember I read it and I said, okay, if God is like this, I want to know this God. I want to hang out with this God. We need to spend a weekend together. And
I love that.
Yes. Yeah, so the shack definitely changed my life.
I love that so much because I feel like that is kind of the problem in air quote religion right now is that, right? We're made to feel so guilty and terrible about ourselves and judged and all these things. And, you know, yeah, of course he is going to judge us, but he really would rather you just change your life and get on board and, you know, be the best person you can be.
Exactly. And God doesn't have a three-headed dog. I don't believe God has a three-headed dog, right? So there's no like ultimate defensiveness. And so I believe that endless compassion is always there, that endless love is always there. And it's not that, but I grew up thinking of God as like that parent that you have to like hide everything from and fix things and try to correct it and delude yourself, you know, and all this other stuff. When in reality, the God that I now perceive is a God that's like, that I could go to and be like, I messed up, help, or whatever the cry is, you know, and there's never going to be a lightning bolt coming at me, you know, and it's all, the answer is always yes. And there's always forgiveness and there's always love and there's always compassion. And a belief that I have that in me too. I have that same capacity to extend to other people, just like it's extended to me, you know?
Amen.
And so that is so important to me.
Yes. I love that so much too, because right. Like he calls us to love others the way that he loves us. And so when we start to understand and realize that he has all the compassion for us and just wants the best for us and wants to love us and wants to rescue us and hold us in his arms, then we can do that for our family and our friends and, you know, the people we come in contact with. So, I love that
it's
so much.
It's so true. Yes. I think, and it's not absolute, but I believe that how we relate to our children is often directly proportionate to how we think, if we believe in God, how God relates to us. Right. So if God is judgy and angry and frustrated and not, you know, then I think there is a direct link to how we relate to others in our life, especially our children. And it's so fascinating just to watch that as I work, because I do a lot of things around spirituality and intuition and things like that with clients. And it's so interesting to make that connection sometimes with people.
Yeah. No, that's huge. Oh man, I'm so glad we got the opportunity to touch on that. Sorry, my tongue's not working right.
<You're fine. laughs>
I'm glad we had the opportunity to talk about that because I think that's a really, really big connection that most people don't make and they don't get.
Yes. Awesome. Yes. I'm sorry you said rapid and I'm like, okay, go ahead, next.
No, I love it because, you know, it just spurs more conversation. So it's great. What's your favorite Friday night at home?
Man, probably what we did this weekend. So with this quarantine, we've been getting kind of creative with stuff. And my son was supposed to go to space camp and it ended up getting canceled. So I was like, we'll create space camp at home. So we literally pitched a tent on our side yard. And we got one of those big, like we had this movie screen that we got on a Black Friday sale. And we like pulled that out of the box and set that up. And we literally ate popcorn and while in the tent, slept in the tent and watched a screen on the green and slept in the tent all night. It was so much fun. I'm like, I want to do this every Friday.
That is so cool. You know, what's so ridiculous is we have plenty of space and still have not pitched a tent to be like, hey, let's. Let's have a camp out. And my family loves camping so much. We bought a camper right before quarantine. So me and my daughter have gone out there to have like a little girl's night and stuff. So that was really fun.
Yeah. Nice. Nice.
What was your dream job as a kid?
Flight attendant. Oh. Flight attendant. That's what I wanted to be. I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And my grandmother. Talk about squashing dreams. She was like, so you want to be a waitress in the sky? And I was like, well, dang. And at the time I was like,
about it like that.
Yes, I do want to be a waitress in the sky. And I still have a deep love for travel now. Like I have this intention to support my kids touching every continent in the world before they go off to college. That is my intention, except Antarctica. You could do that on your own, dude. I'm sorry. I don't hold an ice like that. But all the others, I will help you get there.
Oh my gosh. Love that so much, because my mom was, my mom worked for an airline when I, well, she still does, but, so we flew a lot when I was little. And that's so funny because I always thought it was so fascinating that you could be a flight attendant. I'm like, you get to wear this cute little outfit and everyone just thinks you're so cool. And you just, you know, you get to travel all over the place. Yes, I'm on board, girl. Let's go be flight attendants.
Hello, I'm with you. Breaking free from stable misery, one flight at a time.
Oh my gosh, so fun. Okay, what is your best advice to help our listeners live with audacity?
I would say when you feel stuck, start with what you want. Always start with what you want and work your way back. So whenever you find yourself in a situation where you feel stuck or afraid or shut down or blown up or whatever the case may be, start with where you want to go and then ask yourself, what is the very next step I can take in this moment? And this is the self-empowerment phase in the PATHS model, but like, what's the very next step I can take in this moment to bring me one step closer? Just one. It might be take a deep breath. It might be go for a walk. It might be paint a picture, whatever. But, you know, just ask yourself, what is one step I can take to get me closer to that vision in this moment? And then just breathe out and allow whatever comes up to come. And then trust that it's the next step.
Yeah. Well, and that's true, right? You got to trust that it's the next step. Have you seen Frozen 2?
Yes, I did.
The Next Right Thing. I love that so much.
Oh, you know, so I need to watch it again because somebody else said that, The Next Great Thing. And I was like, was that a song on there? Or I need to watch that again.
Were you on your phone?
No, I wasn't. I was in the theater. But I think it was, there's just so much singing on Frozen. Like after a while, I'm like, oh, another song. Okay. Yeah, and I think I don't always listen to the words. Like,
that's awesome.
Sorry, Elsa.
Yeah. No. Okay, where can people find you to get more information about your services and how they can work with you?
Yes. So the best way is I would invite people to go to healingstablemisery.com. And on that page, you can do another thing. You can get in contact with me, and you can also download the guide that I created on how to break free from stable misery in your parenting and in your partnership. It's got some, it walks you through the relationship evolution roadmap and gives you really clear, specific steps that you can take every step on that path to break free from stable misery. And you can also message me and we can hop on a call and get started, give you some tips about how to break free.
I love it. And I will definitely put that in the show notes. Thank you so much for being here. Oh my gosh, I had so much fun hanging out with you.
This was so awesome. Thank you for having me.
Hey y'all, I had to jump in here real quick because I need a favor. If you are loving the Live with Audacity podcast, I need you to do me a big solid favor and share it with your friends, share it on social media, and go to the Apple iTunes link and click subscribe, rate it, review it. I need to know your feedback, and I want to keep putting this out for you, so I really need your help to get the message out. Thank you so much for your loyalty and your super kind and sweet words. They mean so terribly much to me.